Thank you so much for joining us for another Digitally Diverse podcast. Today we have the honour of having Amanda Maycott, the design manager for REA, joining us. Thank you for joining us, Amanda.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, really love an overview of, you know, where you've come from and your career to date.
Yeah, sure. So as you can probably tell from my accent, I'm Brazilian. I'm from South America. I was born in a small city in the south of Brazil, lived in Spain in a couple of cities as well, and moved to Australia 6 or 7 years ago. Basically, in my career, I started working in visual graphic design. Graphic design, as we used to say, nowadays it's more like visual. Worked in local agencies, focused more on branding, packaging, visual design. That was pretty much like everything that I've done for, I don't know, I would say for the next 10 years of the beginning of my career, when I moved to Seville to study and then to do a post-graduation in Barcelona in digital and creative strategy. That's when I started working more in a digital environment. But at the very beginning, I was very focused on branding and packaging, and I really loved that space. Fun fact is that when I moved to Spain for the first time, I had like no experience talking Spanish at all. So it was all learned by doing. And I just feel that ability has been following my entire life. I am really good at learn by doing and trying to, you know, try things myself. And then I see if it worked or not. I lived then 10 years in Rio, went back to Brazil after Barcelona, lived in Rio and had the absolute pleasure to work with the most amazing people. Had some amazing years living in Rio, working in Tattle Design, which is probably the best agency in Brazil, or if not one of the very best ones. Worked in projects for Rio 2016 during the Olympics. We created the brand for the Olympic Games 2016. And also I led the Coca-Cola design team. And it was an amazing experience. It was my first time doing any sort of leadership role. Learned a lot, made a lot of mistakes. And it was really, really fun. After that, I worked in advertising as maybe almost all designers in the world. We ended up always talking a little bit about advertising. Spent a few years working at Ogilvy. Did some really great projects, won a couple of awards, which was really incredible, and learned a lot about teamwork and leadership. And the fun thing is that was within working in this advertising environment that I started to work on some social impact initiatives, which is something that I've always been trying to do in my role since then. So we created Unrow and Go, which is a multifunctional piece designed to help the refugees who are fleeing from Syria to Europe. And we got an award for that. And it was an exhibition in Amsterdam Museum for a couple of months. So it was an incredible experience as well. And then moved to Sydney 7 years ago. And in here, I've had the chance to work in digital projects and then started as a freelancer, created a couple of ideas as well, like Food Loop, which is just a concept, but opened me a couple of doors in the market as well. Worked with the New South Wales National Parks, Freely, which is a new startup, now quite big, that has been reinventing the entire way we do travel insurance and then we travel the world, and now working at REA for the last almost 1 year.
There's so many things I want to dive into. I think, yeah, one thing that you touched on about learning by doing and those skills that you've picked up when you moved from Brazil to Spain, you never forget those life skills of just getting stuck in and learning in the moment. What is there any other situations that have come up lately where you felt like you had to rely on that?
Yeah, I think leadership roles, it's always learned by doing. And I constantly caught myself thinking that I should not be doing this. For me to become a leader, I have to do an MBA or a master's degree, or I have to restart my career. So I feel that this kind of a feeling that I will just go and try, and then I would not be the best one at first, but then I'll try the second time and then a third and fourth until the moment that I do feel comfortable, and that starts becoming my comfort zone. I feel that's been like probably the biggest pattern of my life, and I learned to really enjoy that feeling that I can do anything I put my head into.
So Amanda, tell us about your role with REA and what kind of problems are you solving there?
That's a really interesting question, because when I joined REA, I remember in my first interview, I've was feeling that I know everything about property, about real estate, because that's my hobby for the last, I don't know, 10 years. I love going into the apps that, you know, any app that are out there in the market at Australia. Yeah. And I would spend like hours before going to bed just seeing things out there. What's for rent, what's for selling, and what's the market? How is the market looking like? So when I did my interview, I was like, look, I'm an expert. I know everything about property. What happened is that when I joined REA, well, we know the app and the website for realestate.com.au, it's just a little tip of the iceberg. There is a whole universe that lives underneath that surface. So I'm still learning. I just feel that it's going to take me years to understand everything that we do. But sorry, just trying to summarize. I joined as a product design manager. It was like almost 1 year ago. I lead a team of four people in a space that we call the agency marketplace. And basically what we do is to reimagine the way consumers, which are people like you and I, sellers or buyers or renters, and customers, what we call like the agencies, sales agents or property managers, etc., how they connect. So basically what my tribe and my space do, it's to create the platforms, the experiences, the interfaces, the design communications and notifications, etc., that will connect the right consumer to the right customer, so we can change the way the world experiences property, which is our mission at REA and drives everything.
So cool, because yeah, you're right. Like, I'm a lucky person trying to buy a house at the moment, and I feel like I spend my whole life on realestate.com.au, and why I probably see like 5% of what that platform actually is. So yeah, because you're right, the real estate agents would see a completely different side of the platform to what a regular user would. So yeah, super interesting.
Yeah, and within REA, it's funny because what we know, yes, as buyers or sellers or renters, what we see is the red app, what we call, which is the realestate.com.au, both app and website. However, there is like a whole bunch of other systems that we have. One of them is like flatmates.com.au. The other one, it's realcommercial.com.au, focused on other properties. And I mean, yeah, Ignite, which is another feature, another platform designed for the customers and, you know, principals and sales agents, property managers to manage their space. So yeah, it's a really big ecosystem to be working on.
Yeah. So what are the high priority problems that you and your team are dealing with at the moment?
At REA, we approach the design, the customer and consumer problems into under two teams, the consumer and the customer. I work on the customer space. I think one of the biggest ones that we want to focus for the next couple of months, it will be to dive more into understanding what are our customer needs, what are their jobs, when I say jobs, I'm not talking about their roles, but their jobs to be done, their problems, their challenges every day, the pain points, the experience, utilizing different platforms and managing CRMs and then REA platforms and then, you know, going to inspections and everything, openings, everything that we know, it's part of their day-to-day. We want to understand that in detail so we can continue providing innovation and, you know, new tools, new features to help them manage this entire routine. And also another good thing that we are trying to do at REA is to kind of overall, it's to help the consumers, people like you and I, to find the right people to help us to find a property, even for selling or buying. But it's important that they find the right agency and the right agent that will go with them throughout that journey. It's not just about concluding and, you know, completing that transaction, but also finding someone that's going to help you along the way. It's really key to us.
Helping a potential buyer or somebody actually go through the whole process and have it as seamless as possible. I don't know if it'll ever get there, but maybe. So what kind of like research are you yourself involved with, the research and being on the ground to find out those pain points, or do you guys have a dedicated research team to do that?
At REA, we're really lucky to have a really experienced team of researchers. They work with us, not only validating the experiences that we are designing or the tests that we are already conducting, but they also help us, the design leaders, to understand what are the opportunities, what are the places that we can create an impact on the customer's day-to-day life. So it's great that we have this kind of two-side approach, and we can use the research team and they can help us with their depth mm-hmm. of understanding.
Yeah, I think that more and more platforms and companies are now starting to rely on UX research, which I think is so, so great because it just makes everyone's life a bit easier. You really do get to the bottom of things a lot quicker and a lot more efficiently. And yeah, is that how you've found working with a dedicated team?
Yeah, there is also another point. You're absolutely right. But I'm also going to add one of the things that we do at REA, which I think it's like really amazing, is to have the research team also being, it's what we call the capability team. So they are helping to upskill the designers, whatever, if it's an associate or a mid-level designer or a senior one or the design managers. Everyone in the design team has the chance to actually upskill their abilities in conducting and planning or preparing research. So I think they are a very, very key part of everything that we do. They not just guide us or they lead their pieces to themselves, but they also help us to, you know, improve our ways of doing research, of defining the methodology that we want to follow, providing frameworks. So they also upskilling the team alongside the journey.
That's fantastic. Love that. So Amanda, what would you like to tell the audience about the team and the culture at REA?
It's funny because when I joined REA, I was really impressed at the very beginning on the balance on gender equality. And when I say that, I worked with companies where I had like women in leadership positions, and we also had like women growing into leadership positions. But I feel that it was really impressive how the company has like multiple different people, the diversity in leadership positions. It's very insane. It's very balanced. And when I say balanced, I'm not talking 70-30 or something close. I'm talking 50-50. Yeah. In the executive leadership team, we do have half-half female and male leaders. Also, when we are talking about, if we go to the design community, the design world, we also have the amount of product design managers. Actually, now it's currently a little bit over for more women than men. And also the senior product design managers, we are also now in, two women and one man. It's not just seeing that happening for one or two people. I think just seeing that that was part of a pattern, it was part of the culture, and it was like encouraging, the managers were encouraging women to grow and women to challenge themselves and, you know, like don't doubt themselves all the time, as we probably grow up asking ourselves too many questions. If are we capable? Do we know enough? Are we good enough? Can I make an impact? Or they know better than I do. So I feel that REA really encourages and provides a lot of support in terms of even courses or workshops and stuff to promote and have the same approach and have the same results for women and men in leadership and, you know, career progression.
That's awesome.
Probably the most amazing thing in terms of culture, but also the mental health approach that REA has. It's really, really strong. The work-life balance and well-being, it's like something that we speak every day. And I really enjoy talking about this with my direct reports. I really love to make sure that they are, you know, wrapping up at the right time. They are starting at the right time, that they have flexibility if they want to do something else, if they want to manage their work time. I am always trying to make sure that they are putting their families first and their, you know, personal life first, because, and then you just see that in the day to day, like when people feel happy and feel supported, they just work, I don't know, with more like willingness to do something big, to create an impact and to help others and then to share what they know. So I think this culture of trust, it's really great. And I'm really happy to see that
so
every
cool.
day.
Like, especially with, you know, seeing other women in leadership positions and kind of like getting that validation from the higher ups, it does, like, people do notice, like,
yeah,
you can't be what you can't see. It's so important, like, that we see visually, like, oh, okay, if she's done it, I can do it. Or, you know, if maybe it's someone with a disability, like, oh, if they can do it, I can do it. Like, it's, 100%. And it's great that you're advocating to your team as well to really take advantage of those resources. Because I feel like sometimes it's so hard for a junior to, you know, it's their first big job and they don't want to clock off if everyone else is working still. So, yeah, I hear so many stories about that. So, no, that's fantastic.
There is one funny story that I noticed last year. I was exploring the Slack channels. So as you know, I mean, Slack is the place to understand everything that's going on. There is one space, one Slack channel called Neurodiversity. So I struggle with burnout in the past and I struggle daily with anxiety. I'm working really well across it, but I mean, to go over it, but it's something that I know it's always right here. I just have to make sure that it's kind of, everything is fine in there. So I found this neurodiversity channel, and people who sometimes have like ADHD or, I don't know, they can have like anything in terms of like, any mental health issues, or they're just going through a difficult time. And it's a place where everyone, it's really open, sharing tips, you know, some changes on their routine that help them to, you know, perform better or to live their life better or sleep better. I just feel that if this is something that we talk, it's natural and everyone can accept and knows how to deal with it.
Yeah, that like openness. Yeah, yeah. Like you can deal with it so much better if you're, you know, just open about it. And if, you know, even if it is just like a mental health issue or, you know, something work related, everything's better when you just talk it out and figure it out with two brains rather than one. So yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And they just voice it out. It's easy to just like raise your hand and saying that you are struggling with this or that, or you have this or that condition, and you just go like transparency leads both ways if that's part of a company culture.
Definitely. So what higher education pathway did you take, and would you recommend it? Would you recommend it or choose it again?
That's tricky. I mean, my career pathways was very predictable. I graduated in graphic design, design and then major in graphics. It's really helpful. And I almost feel that this is the right way to start, if that's something that we can say, because it gives me like a really good experience and knowledge on communicating through anything, any platforms in general. So I do feel like very comfortable with visual presentations or creating, putting interfaces together or any sort of communication newsletter or anything. I do feel that there is a lack in understanding data or, you know, like anything that it's a little bit too detailed. Of course, I can handle data in a higher level, but diving into exploring data or going like a little bit deeper on technology and understanding the different languages. And I just feel that that's something that was missing. So I've been doing some courses and I've been trying to work around this lack of knowledge. And I'll definitely encourage other designers, if they have the chance, if they have like a similar background, to go a little bit heavier in understanding the different platforms, what are the limitations for backend, frontend, what makes you to make this or that choices when you're creating different journeys. I think that's like definitely a plus when I see a candidate that has a good understanding of both data and tech.
Yeah, you're right. Like a lot of the higher education or tertiary degrees do very much focus on like design foundations and a lot of theoretical, almost like art and advertising leaning design. And when I studied design at uni, and that's what I had a very traditional theoretical degree. And you're right, I graduated and I didn't really know what UX and UI was, because I just wasn't really taught. And now it's like that's the way that everything's going. So yeah, I think you're really spot on there with focusing on the tech side of things. It's only going to become a bit more prevalent. And there is definitely still a place for that theoretical classic design education. Absolutely. But in more of like a practical sense, it's good to get a good grasp on the tech side of things too.
Yeah, I think you're really right. There is absolutely the place. Actually, it's something that it's very foundational for all of us to know, and knowing how to execute, knowing how to you know, creating this template or creating this visual and laying out the right components and finding a right balance. I think that's a must know, but also I would like to have a little bit like the same foundation that I have with visual communication and all sorts of imagery understanding that I do have. I would like to have the same with a tech as well. I don't think you can have one without the other. I currently try to find the balance, but I think like the best professionals, the ones that I look to join my team, it's great when I see that they do have this understanding of creating, putting together the UI, and also, sorry, and then there is like a, it's a three pillars Tripula systems that actually it's great. It's like the UI understanding, or at least being capable to manage UX as well and define the experience. And sometimes that will go without any sort of visual at all. And also the implementability or understanding tech, because you're going to drive lots of conversations with tech team. If you know your limits, if you know the limitations, what can be implemented, what cannot, what's difficult to bring to, you know, to a release, what this search bar is going to take a certain amount of time. So if we can avoid that through a different component. So I think that's kind of the triad that makes a great design.
Yeah, 100%. Like, you can build the most beautiful, beautiful, beautiful interface, but if it can't be built, it can't be built.
And if the navigation is awful, if you have to take many steps to achieve the same thing that you could do easily, it's also like not great. So I think it's a good mix of skills.
Well, I guess being that you had quite a traditional design degree background, what was there a catalyst to make you want to go down more of a tech route?
You remember when I talked to you about this refugee project that we've done, that I've done with the team in the past? I think that's when I realized that was 2012, I think. I'm sorry, 13. And that's when I realized that I was always thinking about something like something tactical, something physical. And I realized that I would have a much, much bigger impact if I was creating like a digital product to help these people, to help people fleeing from a war zone or something and starting their life in a new country. So I started to see like the impact that I wanted to have in people's life was much bigger when I was thinking digitally. And even like the release, you can, this agile approach that you can do something faster and then you can keep iterating on it and keep measuring the impact and then going back to the drawing board and improving the experience. So I started doing more and more projects like that. And then also I moved to Australia, which gave me like it was the catalyst to move from half offline, half online to be fully digital focused. And also I believe that it's a really rich environment for you to play on. Like you can play with, you can design things for, I don't know, the real estate industry, but also for the travel industry and then national parks. Like who would have said you experience the national parks, and you can also improve your experience by, you know, booking accommodations through their website and their apps. So I think we can have an impact in basically everything through a digital experience that it's well designed.
Yeah, you're 100% right there. Like it does open so many doors when you start looking into like a career in tech or how much impact that you can have on a user, because we all use tech every day. So someone's behind the UI of everything that we use and the experience. So yeah, I love that. That's a really cool answer.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's really interesting that as users, we take things for granted, right? So like I used to use the REA app, real estate app, every night. And I thought it was like this small, it was just like that part of experience. So I think we take things, all these digital experiences for granted without understanding all the complexity that's behind. And that's for everything. That's for the New South Wales National Parks. That's for Medicare. So I think there is always space for designers to improve the experience and make people's life a little bit better. And that would go step by step into creating like a remarkable experience that it's completely invisible. That means that it's great.
Yes, if you're not thinking about it, that means that you've done a good job.
You've got there.
Well, I guess in regards to like, you know, you mentioned design and REA in particular is kind of like an iceberg where, you know, the user or a regular person using the app might only see a tiny, tiny tip of the iceberg, but there's lots more underneath. Do you have any advice to give to like younger designers perhaps or people that are going through uni at the moment? Any advice as to how to tackle that iceberg?
I would go at probably the advice that no one gave to me was understanding your skills as not the things that you can do, especially in design. We are very attached to, you know, deliverables and, you know, very clear visual, sometimes like a tangible outcomes, and understanding that your skills are also like communication with stakeholders and planning, putting together like a map of all the experiences that will deliver this product, or, you know, understanding the complexity of what you're doing, not just through the designs that you're executing, but also like the ecosystem and then this kind of all the relationships that we have to create at work. And I've worked with some associate designers that could understand that they were not, their job was not just to create the interface, the design, make it beautiful for this only, but understanding the whole thing. I think that's something that I'll be forever learning. And we never stop understanding what we are capable of. If you can leave uni seeing your potential to communication, to driving meetings, to facilitating workshops, to putting together design plans, I think that's what differentiates you from other designers and candidates around there.
Yeah, I think that's so true.
And also helps with the self-confidence as well, like how you put yourself out there because you know your value.
Yeah, those soft skills are just as important as the hard skills. That's great. So Amanda, going off, you know, what advice that you'd give to young designers, is there any particular advice that you would give to perhaps aspiring women in tech that want to become leaders in their field?
Yeah, I love this question. And the reason is because I feel that we as women, students and recently grads, we do have I feel that we have this impression that your capacity, your talent is on creating specific things. So for example, creating designs for this screen or creating logos or, you know, for this branding or creating experience user flows for whatever experience you are designing. And sometimes I think our value also lives in the soft skills and how much you can drive a conversation, you can communicate with stakeholders, how much you can plan ahead on your workload, or how much you can foresee your roadmap, and you can understand that your job is just one piece of this entire big roadmap that's delivering like a bigger outcome. So I feel that for grads or for women specifically, understanding your potential, the value of your communication skills, how much you can add to your team by being a team player, by being available, by connecting the dots, by talking to others and understanding what's their role in the product or in the experience that you guys are building together. I think that makes like a designer just not part of the execution, but part of the leadership, part of the thinking, the strategy as well. It took me many years to realize that it was not just about the quality of what I was delivering. It was about what I was facilitating. So I think seeing designers as facilitators, it's one of the, blew my mind and changed the way I was seeing
my role. Yeah, I get that because I'm getting it right now. Like, that's so true though. Like, so much of design is that facilitation piece and the communication piece and connecting with, you know, your teammates and users and stakeholders. And yeah, just touching on that is so much of the job. So if you do that well, yeah, it'll make your life way easier and everyone's life way easier.
Yeah, I think so. I do. I still like, I'm a big supporter of being hands-on and creating designs and doing things. But nowadays, I almost feel like that is the easy part. Yeah. I feel that the entire, all these other soft skills and all this, having this peace of mind that you are connecting here and there, you're making decisions based on this, and this data interpretation, or because you had this meeting with this person, I think that makes you someone that's kind of getting more and more ready to grow into more senior positions and then leadership roles and then heads of roles, you know, and then, yeah, the sky's the limit.
No, that's great. So Amanda, just to get into your big juicy brain, is there any podcasts or anything that you listen to that kind of day-to-day really influences you and your work?
Yeah, there is one podcast that I've been really addicted to. And I wait every week for the next episode. And it's really great. It's really inspiring, not design related, but leadership, you know, well-being, female questions and business as well. It's called We Can Do Hard Things by Glennon Doyle. And it's so inspiring. They see life in such a humane and open way and honest. It's about like bringing yourself out there, your true self, and your understanding your purpose and how do you do even like business or even your personal life, but with this honesty that this is what you believe and knowing that you can do hard things. Basically, I think the biggest message is pretty much the title of the podcast, We Can Do Hard Things, and we can. So probably, yeah, if I'm here in Australia today and working with what I'm working and when I look back at my past and everything that I've been through, I can do hard things and you as well. And as far as we know our potential, I think, yeah, we have like a really good journey ahead of us.
Oh, I'll have to check that out. I haven't heard of that one. That's great.
I'll send you one specifically. It's definitely. With We Can Do Hard Things with Bozoma St. John. Okay. Bozoma St. John, she is the former CMO for Netflix. Before that, she was CMO for Apple. Before that, she was CMO for Pepsi.
Oh, amazing.
And she is this inspiring woman. She is just like amazing in what she had just launched a new book called The Urgent Life, which I'm dying to buy, but it's not in Australia yet. And this talk between the three of them, it's like Lennon Doyle, her wife, which is called, I don't remember the name, Amy, I think, and then Bozoma St. John. It's one of the most inspiring talks that I've had, like about this self-confidence, believing in yourself, seeing that you can do hard things, looking back at your journey and seeing, mm-hmm. wow, I'm really amazing.
Okay, well, I know what I'm listening to on my commute.
That's it. Oh my gosh, you're going to love it.
And is there any other mentors or like business leaders that inspire you?
I love this question again, but that's a really tricky one because that's something that I've been reflecting a lot lately. During my career, I didn't have many mentors. I had some really good leaders. I had great directors, most of them men, which is really interesting. And that's something that when I started to realize, when I struggled with burnout a few years ago, I started to realize that I didn't have any sort of kind of conversations with any women in a position mm-hmm. of power. So no one will understand me as a woman, as an immigrant, as a mom of two, and all the struggles that would mean like for someone's life. Struggles and perks. I mean, it's great, but it changes your life, right? So I feel that I didn't have this kind of balance between, you know, female directors and male directors. I had one really inspiring female director once. She was probably the one that told me that I was not supposed to be in a design role anymore. I was supposed to be in a leadership position. I was supposed to be in kind of a meetings with executives and discussing like the future of projects and the future of. That was back in Brazil. In Australia, I didn't have the chance to find a mentor yet, but that's something that I have on my list. I want to make this part of my routine. I want to have someone that I can talk, that I can find guidance from, that I can, you know, get back with my questions on how do I influence more or how do I build trust with my team? How do I overcome this or that difficulty? I'd never had this relationship formalized in my career. Even though I was mentored for other people in some programs, I was never a mentee. And that's something that I really want to have. So if I can give an advice to anyone that's listening to this one, it's like, go find a mentor, someone that inspires you and someone that is doing their work in the way that you would like to do too. So yeah, and feed from this person, from whatever they can share with you. So you can drive your career. You can make informed decisions on how you want to drive your career. You just don't go mm-hmm. with the flow. It's going to help you to have like go to the direction that you're looking to.
Yeah, I think that's the best bit about having a mentor is you learn from their mistakes and you're able to, it helps you steer the way a little bit easier. And having that sounding board is really important. So if anyone knows of any cool people in the product space that would like to have a mentor as a mentee, reach out. We'll hook you guys up. But yeah, that's great. And that's so cool that you really, really influential person in design leadership and you're still craving that mentorship. Because I think you're right. Like you always need someone who's been in your shoes before to help you navigate what you're doing.
Yeah.
Even top leaders need someone to to help support them.
Absolutely. And I think it's good to understand that this support, this guidance doesn't need to come from someone with exactly your background. Yeah. So it's not that you as a designer should look at other designers and, you know, I want to learn from that other designer because I want to take exactly the same path. That's not true. You can learn from, as soon as you, what we discussed before, as soon as you realize that you are not someone that only knows how to make things beautiful or that only knows how to make things to interact to, you know, how to make good experiences. As soon as you understand that you are someone with a whole range of skills that goes from communication to management to planning to whatever else, you can get this mentorship from anyone, from someone from with a business background or someone with a product background, a design background. I mean, since as long as this person has conducted their life in a way that inspires you. So if they have like a, if you're looking for someone that struggles with situations like, I don't know, work-life balance, or they are really good influencing, I think that would be the person for you. At least that's how I try to filter down potential mentors. I'm not looking into the design field only. I'm trying to expand my range.
Yeah, that's so cool. I've never really thought of it like that. I just thought, yeah, you follow a mentor so they can help you do the things that they've done, but that necessarily might not fit with everyone. So, yeah.
That can be the case. That can definitely be the case. Like you want to, if you want a very clear direction, yeah, you go to your leader in your field. If you want to, I don't know, just understand like how to be a better professional, or you explore your ambitions and create your career journey, you probably graduate, you can graduate in design and end up being a CEO of something else. So yeah, whatever goes in your path, I think we can learn anything and we can do hard things.
We can do hard things. Well, on that note, Amanda, I just want to say a big, big, big thank you for joining us today. I've learned so much and I'm sure that everyone else has too. And yeah, thank you again. And hopefully we'll hook you up with a mentor.
That would be great. If you have, yeah, if I can find a mentor, if you guys want to recommend as a mentor to someone, that's, I'm absolutely open.
Great.
Thank you so much for having me. It was such a pleasure. Lovely talking to you.
You too.
Thank you, Ellen.